Saraswati Vyasa Tato Jaya Moderate. Last trapa is Abhadrasu Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Utamasloke Bhakti Bhavaiti. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam is not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Therefore, even before we read the Bhagavatam, before we discuss the Bhagavatam, we always take cognizance of that fact that, yes, this is the literary incarnation of the Lord. And therefore, we pay our homage, our respectful obeisances, to the author of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva, who is literally an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. So, this literature became manifested at a time that is most needed, when Lord Krishna left the planet back to his kingdom. The whole planet was overwhelmed with grief and ignorance, but with the help of the Srimad Bhagavatam, illumination rooted in Krishna consciousness become manifest. So without people who don't drink the nectar of the Bhagavatam, they don't have life. And we can see how people outside there, they're miserable. They may be in so much of money, they may have all the opulences, but they're miserable because they don't know anything about it. You know, Lord Krishna and his devotees. Now Lord Krishna and the devotees, they are the source of joy, source of happiness. And also sometimes, you know, we think that, you know, happiness is based on the color of the skin, isn't it? That's why even the celebrities, people like Michael Jackson, they have to change their skin. I just did some research using the general social survey of 2004 every year in America, you know, the GSS, the General Social Survey, they conduct, you know, research, and you know they gather data. So I use the GSS data to conduct some research as part of my a PhD program at Walden, and then I was trying to determine whether race has a relationship with happiness. It was and I was using a chi-square test to be able to analyze the data, and then I found that, you know, race has no bearing with general happiness. And, you know, my supervisor, he was so much enthused with the research, you know. So I'm thinking that, you know, I'm going to have to develop a paper based on that and be able to, you know, perhaps, you know, present it at some future conference. Because sometimes people think, even the great celebrity person, imagine a person like, you know, Michael Jackson. He had everything that money could buy. He had the fame, he had the adoration, but still he was thinking, no, there's something I'm lacking. Color of my skin. I'm not getting sufficient, you know, honor. Of course, he made some point. I think at one time that, you know, he did that partly because his father emotionally abused him. His father told him, "No, I can't remember exactly remember what the father said, but you know, like, you know, a father, you know, verbally spanking a child and say, oh, you are like this, or you're like this, or you are ugly, or you do something like this. Something that has to do with, you know, beauty.
So, but then it had a pinprint on him for a whole lifetime. So even when he grew up, he remembered that his father insulted him. So, but you know, people try to figure out ways to be happy, but you know, no material recourse could actually make anybody happy. People have to go to school. I know one of my friends, he has 3 PhDs, but still, he's not happy. His private life, you know, has nothing to write him about. He doesn't sleep, all of this research here and there. Sometimes the wife will go to his office to even drag him home, because he doesn't even have time for the family. So these are all avenues. We know that abstract thinking, actually, you know, it helps to control the senses, but ultimately it does not really give any lasting happiness. So all of these big guys, you find that, you know, their lives are really empty. If you don't go close to them, you will not really realize that. But if you go close to them, and I work closely with the number of, you know, this is the educational top notchers, and then you find that, you know, they're miserable. they're miserable. So we have a good fortune that, you know, we can also have our own parties. But, you know, our parties purify us. Because it's right from the beginning to the end, the parties are simply replete with Krishna consciousness ideals. People also sing songs. We sing our songs, but our songs are purposeful, spiritually purposeful. And they are geared towards praising the Lord and His devotees. And in that way we get purified. Others also sing songs, the pop stars and all these stuffs. But they get contaminated. People even write books. So our acharya also, they've written books. Vyasadev wrote this Srimad Bhagavatam through his secretary. Who is Vyasadev's secretary who helped him to compile the Vedas?
Ganesh.
What about Vilasini? Gokul, do you believe what Mataji said?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's written in Mahabharata.
That's correct. So, yes, so we have our acharyas. Even when the incarnation of the Lord came as Vyasadeva, you know, he wrote books. But people are also writing books out there. And the purpose of the writing books is two reasons. One is, you know, they want some, you know, recognition as an author. Then the second is they want money. You know, publish a book, you get money, you get a name that you're an author. I remember some years back, you know, some devotees were pushing on me. Hey, it's time for you to be an author. You know, why don't you compile your works, make a book? I said, I have so many books to read. I'm not in a hurry. Because people want a name, you know. I remember one of my friends, one professor, he was the head of the department for classics at his university. You know, he was pushing so much that he would want to compile, you know, my publications into books. I said, I'm not in a hurry. Because the people value this thing so much, you know, to be an author. But the other day, yes, he's an author, but he's an author with a difference. How? The whole of the Vedic, especially the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a commentary of the Vedanta, the Vaishnava Vedanta, is geared towards extricating the living entity from the ocean of samsara. You know, an ocean, if even you are an expert swimmer, you can't show, you can't demonstrate your expertise in swimming in the ocean. You will drown. Correct? No matter how expert a swimmer you may be, you need someone to help you. You will need someone to help you. So that's exactly what Srila Vyasadeva did for us by providing this, you know, Bhagavatam is like a floating, how do they call it, a floating jacket. You know, when you board the airplane, they will show you where you can get, in case of eventuality, where you can get it. So, because no matter how expert a swimmer you are, without a floating jacket, you will drown. It's a matter of time. You will swim, and you swim to where? Which end of the ocean? You don't see where to swim to. And so the material world is the ocean of repeated birth and death. We can't measure the length and breadth. Even the depth of the ocean water, we can't really measure. And there is no need to try to measure anything because it's completely beyond our jurisdiction. And therefore, Vyasadeva kindly made this Srimad Bhagavatam, commented on the Vedanta Sutra in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, and provided it for us to relish, to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, to drink the Srimad Bhagavatam through the ears. Normally people drink juice through the mouth, isn't it? Huh? Drink juice through the mouth. This juice you drink from through the ear. And therefore, it is important for those of us who want to be happy in this world, we should try to listen to the Bhagavatam. Now, it's even been made simple that we have audios of the Srimad Bhagavatam, audios Bhagavad Gita. And so, if even you're in your car, you're driving, you can relish the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this morning, we're going to take our reading, still from chapter 31, Movements of the Living Entities, as enunciated by Srila Kapila Dev. Today's text is text 22. Kapila Uvacha, Evam Krita Mati Gabe, Dasa Mashaha, Stovan Rishi Sadhya Shipati Avachinam Prasuta Suti Marutaha. Lord Kapila continued, the ten month old living entity has these desires even while in the womb. But while he thus extols the Lord, the wind that helps parturition propels him forth with his face downward, with his face turned downward, so that he may be born. There's no purpose, so I go to the next one. Tena was Rista Sahasa Kriwak Siri Aturaha Vinis Kramati Krishrena Niru Chu Niru Niru Chwaso Hatasmriti. Pushed downward all of a sudden by the wind, the child comes out with great trouble, head downward, breathless, deprived of memory due to severe agony. This is describing the pains of childbirth. Can you repeat responsibly, please? Pushed downward,
pushed downwards,
all of a sudden
by the wind.
The child comes out with great trouble.
Head downward.
Breathless and deprived
of memory
due to severe agony. The word Krishrena means with great difficulty. When the child comes out of the abdomen through the narrow passage due to pressure there, the breathing system completely stops. And due to agony, the child loses his memory. Sometimes the trouble is so severe that the child comes out dead or almost dead. One can imagine what the pangs of death are like. The child remains for 10 months in that horrible condition within the abdomen. And at the end of 10 months, he is forcibly pushed out. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord points out that a person who is serious about advancement in spiritual consciousness should always consider the four pangs of birth, death, disease, and old age. The materialist advances in many ways, but he is unable to stop these four principles of suffering inherent in material existence. Janma Mityu Jaravya Ti. Janma, bed. Mityu, dead. Jara, ole. Vyadi, disease. Janma Mityu, Jara, Vyadi. Bed, dead, old age, and disease. You know, we sing distance. Like a song everybody knows about. Distance in our movement. Janma Mityu, Jara, Vyadi, Dukkha, Dosha, Anudasha. Everybody. You know, we recite this loka every here and then, but you know, who is actually making attempts not to be born again? That's the problem. So we hear it. We say it even ourselves. We repeat it. Janma Mityu Jara Vyadi. So here, Prabhupada is given in his purport a description. Kapila Dev has given a vivid illustration in the main text what it takes to be born. And there's a whole lot of suffering for 10 months in the womb. But even the day, the moment of birth, is so horrible. Incidentally, I made some reference to this chapter yesterday about, you know, because I gave the class the other day in the morning, on Saturday morning. So I put on my Facebook about, you know, what we did on Saturday. We gave a Bhagavatam class on the life in the womb and the pains of birth. And I got so many women, you know, making some comments about it. Even some girls who are just doing their masters, and another one who's doing a PhD. they said they're just scared about childbirth. they're scared because then another one was mentioning that, you know, she was just discussing with two other, that's a devotee in DC. She was mentioning that, you know, she was just discussing with, you know, two other devotees who have given birth. You know, they were discussing about, you know, the horrors in childbirth. It's like death. Not only for the child, even for the mother. This is describing the child's case. Okay? What about the mother? As today we are talking about the mother. it's so horrible. Material world, we are so conditioned that, you know, we just accept suffering as normal life. Yes, people accept suffering as normal life. I remember some years back I had an accident and had a bladder rupture in the accident. Everybody thought I was going to die. I also thought I was going to give up the body, but somehow the other Christian wanted me to still be around. But the point is, you know, after having undergone a major surgery, then the senior nurse came into the emergency surgical ward to greet everybody, "Good morning, patients." And everybody said, "Good morning, nurse." And I kept quiet. And she came to me and said, "Pastor Dave, good morning." I said, "You think that this morning is good? If the morning is good, would I be here in this clinic, in this hospital, in this ward, this emergency ward? I don't think this morning is good." I said, "I don't know how to pretend. And I don't think this morning is good." She has not gotten that type of response from any patient for the whole 30 years she's been a senior nurse in the ward. I said, "I mean, but examine it properly. You're asking me. You're saying good morning, but think about it. Is this, if this morning is really good, would I leave my house to be here in this clinic on a bed after a surgery?" But you know, people don't even think about it. Why they are in the clinic? Why they are in the hospital? They forgot what brought them there and why they are there. And then they got adjusted. Of course, to become adjustable at that is also good. But to be adjustable for the sake of adjustability is meaningless. People should reflect about the experiences they are passing through in life. So if I'm sick on a bed, and I don't even think the next, okay, after this trouble, I'm going to have another illness again. It may be a mild one, it may be a more severe one. I remember some years back when I was in Africa managing a temple in Lagos. So you know, there were just series of problems. Just one problem after the other, one problem. And then one of my friends, one devotee, he used to solace me. He said, "Oh, Pastor Dave, don't worry. I mean, after this problem, there'll be no problem again." I said, "Come on, what is this?" The problems are just there in series, you know. As you deal with this one, another one crops up. As you deal with that, another one crops up. That is the nature of this material world. That is just the nature of this material world. It's not that, you know, people come to tell us about, you know, the good things of the future. But these major four principles are there. Birth, death, disease, old age. And sometimes birth, people don't look at it as, you know, something miserable. But you ask a woman who gave birth. And then we are seeing the experience of the child. Children even lost consciousness at the time of birth. Some even die because they have to pass through the cervix, which is just a small hole. They are pushed, forced down. Imagine if you have to come down. You are coming down from the stairs, and someone just push you down from head downwards. If you survive, you're lucky. Or someone threw you out from the window, head downwards. If even you don't go head downwards, just to throw you out from the window alone, you may be fractured. This is bad. And we are happy when we give birth to children. We should be happy when we give birth to children. But let's understand the pains of bed, the agony involved with the child, and not only with the child. Some women even they lost consciousness. I know of cases where, before the advent of the cesarean section, some women during labor and even after birth, they will vow never to have sex. They will vow
especially during labor, they'll be shouting on the husband's name. They're the one who gave me this trouble. But actually, both of them gave the woman the trouble. Not only the husband. But then, the thing is, you know, after the childbirth, you know, so many people come around, in-laws come to take care of the mother, and, you know, a husband, you know, took extra care of the wife, and, you know, petting here and there, and then very soon, you know, she forgets about, you know, the pain. And then be prepared to go through another trouble. So, we accept suffering as normal, but it shouldn't be like that. At some point in time, we should realize, yes, in this world, things are not going to be better. Rather, things are going to be falling apart more and more. Although we are making so much innovation in, you know, technology, nowadays, instead of making the bridges over the river, you know, we'll go under. Isn't it? Huh? We'll go under. we'll prefer to become, to act like fishes. You know, before we try to act like birds, you know, we climb over on the bridge, but now, you know, we want to go through the tunnel, you know, under the water. Why not? But we don't reflect about, you know, the sufferings that we are undergoing. If the scientists are really reflecting about the sufferings that man is undergoing or human beings are undergoing on the planet, perhaps they would have extended their innovation to figure out ways on how to really deal with the issue of birth and death. But of course, they tried. There's nothing they can do is beyond their jurisdiction. Therefore, Vyasadeva has made provisions for us. Where the scientists failed, it's where our acharyas have actually excelled. Where the scientists have failed is where our acharyas have excelled. So, who is more innovative? It's the acharyas. They don't advertise themselves, but they are more innovative than the material scientists. Because they are making provisions for us to have a shy of relief from what is considered to be the most repressive impositions. What could be more repressive an imposition like birth and death? Who wants to even have encounter any or have any ailment, ill health? Nobody. But today we're talking about birth. And birth is so agonizing to the child and to the mother. If we understand this principle, who will ever choose to be born again? But again, when the child is born, I think on Saturday we mentioned how in the womb, the child, you know, renders some prayers to the Lord. Because at some point in time, you know, he has darshan of the Lord. 7 months or so, he has darshan of the Lord. And, you know, look, I'm suffering, my Lord. Just get me out from this place. And I'll dedicate, you know, my whole life to serving you so that I will come back to you. In this life, this is my vow to you. And when a child is born, you know, he becomes like a small king. You know, everybody smiles at him or at her, and they pet him, give him that, give him this. Each time he just raises an alarm, I mean, the mother is in anxiety. He wants to see, well, what am I going to do to please my baby? In that way, you know, the child, you know, he draws attention of everyone in the home, and you know, he's only a king who is drawing attention of everybody, is it not? So the child becomes a small king, and he becomes happy, and forgets about all the trouble that he actually went through. Even his vow, his promise to the Lord when he was in the womb, he forgot. You know what? This is why This is the logic behind why people who are very opulent, who are not devotees, you talk to them about God, they will disbelieve you because they feel, what's the problem? Because, you know, a wealth can actually cover up someone. It's an energy of the Lord. It's part of the illusory energy that can cover up someone and it make him to forget everything about, you know, God consciousness. This is a typical example with a child. The child is exposed to this type of, you know, favorable environment where everybody is looking upon him like a worshipful deity. Anything he wants, immediately is provided. If he makes an alarm, immediately, mother will ask, "What do you want? What can I? What do you want? What do you want?" Daddy will ask, "What do you want?" Immediately, they make provisions for it. Of course. So when the child is growing, then the parents become stubborn. I remember a physiotherapist at New Jersey Medical School. You know, when I had a broken finger, so I was going there. And then, of course, when she got to the sign, I'm a monk. And then she said, you know, I became like a consultant. Everything happening at home, everything has to do with her husband and her child. She has to consult me before she decides. So then, you know, she was telling me how, you know, she was going to get a handset phone for her son. I think a boy of maybe 10 years or something like that. So they went to the shop and the boy went to pick a handset that cost like $500. So she said that, "I don't use this type of handset. Your father even doesn't use this type of handset. Why you want this type of handset?" He said, "I'll choose for you." Because the child is a little bit mature. Okay, so now, you know, the parents are becoming stubborn. But that child would. Oh, anything the child wants to give. But that is like an overcompensation for the trouble, you know, the child passed through in having to take bed. They have to overcompensate him so that he forgets about all those troubles. All the trouble you pass through. But as parent devotees, we should actually be introspective. We should go down to earth and be practical about the suffering, that the agonies that the child has to pass through in having to take birth, in having to come into this material world. So here in the purport, Prabhupada mentions the child lost his consciousness because of, you know, the pressure of birth, the pain. And some women, even some mothers, they lost consciousness. In most cases, the women at the real time of birth, they would basically be unconscious. Because sometimes they put them in the ward and the child is in another place, they don't even know whether it's a male child or it's a female child, they get better. It's after some time before, you know, they've got to know them. So this is all about existence in the material world. And then we have some proper understanding of this principle so that we don't simply sing it, "Janma Mitu, Jara Vyadi, Dukkha Dosh, Anudash." We don't simply sing it, but we try to live in practical terms how to forestall repeated birth and death. Isn't it a good deal, based on what we're hearing from the Sastra? Would you say it's a good deal? It's a good deal to be born? It's not a good deal. I don't think it's a good deal. If I have a choice, I don't think that I would choose to be in another, be pushed into another womb to be there for 10 months or 9 months or whatever. So I don't think it's a good deal. And just like most of you also take cognizance of the fact that it's not a good deal. So the next point is, what are we going to do to forestall or to stop, you know, having to take birth again? That's why we are creating Krishna consciousness. Other people out there, they don't care. They don't even know about it. You think people discuss about, you know, the agony of childbirth? No, people don't discuss it. They discuss, of course, how to protect their children, how to take care of the children, but they don't even discuss how to nurture the children spiritually. And you find cases where a child may even be desirous to have higher principles of knowledge, but the parents are very antagonistic. I've seen parents who feed their children with alcohols. Even before the child starts to talk, feed them with alcohol. I've seen it. They think, you know, I take all this wine, I have to teach my child also how to take wine. It's not, this is not Purana. I've seen it. So, we cannot be sure of our next bed, which place we are going to take bed. And therefore, we have to be decisive now, what to do with our lives. And it's not that, you know, somebody except you take, you put on some saffron cloth before you decide what to do with your life. No. Anybody is the consciousness. Anybody could actually decide what to do with his life or with her life. In other words, you could be in anything, in any position in the material world, and become serious in your Krishna consciousness cultivating to be able to pave way to stop this again coming to take birth in this material world. And don't say, I will do that next life. No, it should be this life. So we have to program ourselves in a very favorable way. Because if you say next life, you cannot be sure, you know. You may even be born in a situation whereby you want to cultivate Krishna consciousness and you're abused by your parents. You're tortured by your parents. It's happening. Maybe right here in this country. Young children, they want to take to Krishna consciousness, and they heavily abuse. I know one girl in North Europe, 13 years old girl, you know, she sent me, she inboxed me a message on Facebook saying that, you know, how do I chant that her family, they're meat eaters, only she is a vegetarian because that is her choice. But, you know, she's not allowed to chant. So I said, but you have your own room? She said, yes. I said, so, just when you wake up, lock your room, and then be there to chant before your parents wake up. Wake up early, like 4 o'clock. You chant before they wake up. If you like, you can go to bed, sleep a little while before you go to school. So she adopted that. And then it worked for her. Because the parents would allow her to chant. The mother, when she was pregnant of this girl, she used to go to temple. But then, you know, she stopped. So she's not chanting. Wouldn't allow the girl to chant. The father is completely another thing. So no one prays to be born in those type of hostile environment. But some of our devotees are born in those type of hostile environments. So why risk to come back again? Why risk it? So Vyasadev has kindly given us this Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada has kindly brought it, you know, has broken it down, written it, commented on it in a very simple language that we can absorb the contents. And so we should take advantage. From what we are seeing in Kapila Dev's instructions here, childbirth is horrible. To be born, it's not just an amazing, you know, nice thing. You can't imagine someone locked up in a room for 8 days. He doesn't see the light. And this one is not only locked up for 8 days, doesn't see the light, and locked up in a womb. You see, if you were locked up in a room, there may be some openings that, you know, the sunlight will come through.
the rays of the sun will come through. In the womb, there's nothing like that. It's dark, completely dark. It's more. It's worse than a dark well. It's worse than Anderson Cooper. The womb is worse than a dark well. And the child has to be there rolling in all type of fluids for months. I mean, in fact, suppose they have a prison where they have those type of provisions. You know, the whole world we hear about, I mean, how it is inhuman. Huh? Amnesty will declare an alarm, we raise an alarm. But here, amnesty does not raise any alarm. Everybody just feels comfortable. And people don't even think about it. This prison for this 9 months, 10 months, they don't even think about it. They don't talk about it. Amnesty doesn't really care about it. But we have a higher amnesty. Higher directors of this transcendental amnesty, people of yesterday, who are raising alarm for us. Hey, watch out. Watch out for another bed. This is the trouble. This is the horrors involved. Therefore, we should embrace this. We should embrace the mercy of yesterday and trying to live our lives in such a way that we have time to chant Krishna's names. Because in Kali Yoga, this is the most expedient way to be delivered from the circle of birth and death, is to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Wherever we are, we should endeavor to see that we are doing this every day at the proper time. The proper time means Brahma Muhurta hours. Because if we have some ill health and the physician gives us some prescription, he says, or she says, this medicine, take it 3 times. One in the morning, empty stomach before meal. One at this set in the afternoon. This when you want to go to bed. When you're ready to sleep, you take it. There's a reason why the physician say that. So you say, although the physician said I should take this empty tummy, I need to eat heavily before I take this medicine. That is a serious negative conjecture that could not really help in the healing process. So sometimes also we know that, you know, we have to chant Hare Krishna, we have to do this devotional service, hearing. But, you know, because we have imbibed the culture of, you know, there is no hard and fast rules. Huh? So we'll have to do the things opposite, upside down. But why the acharyas made provisions for the Brahma Muhurta hours? So if we want to be free from jama, bed, we should take advantage of the medication, the prescription. What times we have to take the prescription as to be able to have the highest efficacy. Undoubtedly, if you take the medication at any time, it will be efficacious to some degree. But if someone wants to make some arrangement or to act in ways that will expedite the healing process fast, then he takes the prescription according to how the doctor had mentioned. If we want to be free, we want to accelerate in our devotional culture, become purified fast, we should chant our rounds during the Brahma Muhurta period. The rest day is there, the whole day is there for you to engage in your secular duties or other duties or whatever. But you chanting your rounds, we should program ourselves in such a way that we chant, we use the Brahma Muhurta period for chanting. But if you are on the internet, if you are glued to the internet till 1 o'clock before you sleep, you won't be able to use the Brahma Muhurta period. Brahma Muhurta period will become a sleeping period for you. Every good thing has its own, you know, demerits.
Every coin has its tail and the face side. So technology is very good, but we also don't get glued and forget to manage our time properly. Otherwise, you know, the very good things could become a source of distraction to our devotional career. So we should take advantage of prescriptions given to us by the acharyas to hear, to drink this, the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam every day, become purified, and to see how we are working together, helping each other to grow spiritually. Because even in the army or in the war front, soldiers cooperate. If someone has not gone into his trench, another soldier will see him and tell him, "Hey, boy, come on. This is a hot zone. Come on." That's how they cooperate. So we should be in the mood of helping each other because we are Lord Chaitanya's soldiers. We shouldn't see someone who is standing and is on the war front, and then we are waiting when the bullet will gun him down. Say, "Oh, he is stupid. This is war. I mean, this is a battlefield. Why did he have to stand up?" Well, there could be a reason. So why did you have to tell the person, "Please, you know, go into a trench"? So we should be in the mood of helping each other, because Maitreya energy, Lord Krishna said, is very difficult to overcome it, because it's Krishna's divine energy. It's Devihi Ishagunamai Mama Maya Durat. So, bet, as we have heard from this verse, is a horrible thing. And we should not vouch to take bet again. We should utilize all facilities at our disposal to avail ourselves with Krishna consciousness, become purified in this life. And it doesn't matter whether you're a householder, you're a vanaprastha, you're a sannyasi, or whatever. It doesn't really matter. Anybody can become perfected. The doors are open. There's no restriction. Hare Krishna. Are there some comments, some questions on this one? Yes.
I can testify to the good thing, Maharaj. Maybe help with more than 100 devotees.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most painful experience that I have seen, like just patient.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Right. Right. It's like the point of life and death. Yeah, it's miserable. Thank you. This is professional. Talk, speaking from experience, you know. she's a medical doctor, and she sees all this is happening. Yes. That is it. That's a good question. How do we get that sense of urgency? Yes, we have to develop an emergency consciousness. It's just like during the problem in, what do you call, in Louisiana, in New Orleans, the government raised an alarm. Everybody evacuate. Still, some people thought, "We have seen this before. They just raising an alarm. It will not be that much devastating." They are the people who died. So yes, there is an adage that, you know, the war that someone hears beforehand does not kill a lame man. Because If even a lame man who can walk, if he hears that there is war coming to this part of Columbus, people are going to attack you. If even he's lame, he can't walk, he will get someone, he will hire someone to pick him up and go away. But the problem is the stigma of Pashyana Pina Pashyati always weighs the living entity down. Even after seeing, partial. Even after hearing. People don't act. Some people don't act even after seeing. And even after hearing, they can't act. I remember when I was a kid, I sneaked out of my father's home to go to the stadium one day. I used to sneak out like that when he's not there. I like to go to... I was also a little bit stubborn, okay? So I used to sneak out. So then, I sneaked out one day to go to the stadium to go and watch armed robbers who are going to be publicly executed as a deterrent for people who are having robbery minds. So I went there. And after the execution, we are leaving the stadium. Three people were caught by the police stealing. They just saw people executed for stealing, for robbery. Right there and then, people were caught stealing. So this is the stigma of passion and partiality. Even after seeing, even after hearing, people are so conditioned by the lust that... But if we are chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we pray to Krishna, we become resolute. This is what I'm going to do. We can develop that emergency consciousness that we don't have to wait. We don't keep procrastinating. Anyway, I'll be serious tomorrow. I don't have chance to chant my rounds today. Tomorrow I'll go to chant. And, you know, procrastination, they say, is the thief of time. It's the only rogue that steals time. Therefore, we don't need to procrastinate. We just have to be resolute. This is what I'm going to do. Here is an emergency. In fact, if you don't have emergency consciousness, it is difficult, it's very difficult to use one lifetime to perfect one's existence. If we don't have emergency consciousness, we can't even wake up to chant our rounds during the Brahma Muhurta period. Because the body is always demanding, come on, you sleep more. You need more rest, you know. The mind will never tell you, get up. Mind will also tell you, come on, boy, you need more rest, you know. Yeah. Yes.
About chanting Brahma Muhurta. There is on Mayapur programs now. Mayapur putting on Mayapur.tv, and we can see all the classes, all nice devotees giving classes, and it starts about 10:30 in the evening. So class will go somewhere until 11:30 or midnight. So what should we choose?
You should choose to go to bed at most 10 o'clock. Otherwise, you will not get up to chant your rounds to be able to arm yourself properly before you go out. If a soldier does not arm himself, he walks into the war front empty-handed. No gun, no ammunition. It is highly unlikely that he comes back home safe. We are going out there into the material world. The principle of the field theory, this is science. This is not I believe or I don't believe. I'm talking that now I'm talking as a social scientist, not as a science now. Now there's a theory which says, that is called the field theory, that the environment impacts on you. As you move on there, there are people you are meeting. They are carrying different type of energies. These energies impact on you, whether you believe it or not. That is the principle of the field theory. Bhakti Swami Maharaj also had written in his books, because you know he read psychology and all this. So he written in his books, he made all these points. Why do we say that The holy place is a place of pilgrimage. You can go there and purify yourself. It is based on this field theory that the environment impacts on you. Therefore, this material world, this planet, the sun is rotating, the planets are rotating around the sun. Some part gets to the sun at a particular time, it's daytime there, the other side that is burnt is night. And even the cardices are calculated according to time zones. We don't say, America is a cardacy in India that I have to follow. The date in India is what I'm going to follow. Because it's a difference of like more than 12 hours. And so, yes, it's very good to have sadhu sangha, to listen to lectures, right, going on at Mayapur. But all the lectures that have been given, especially not the Bhagavatam classes, at the Panchatattva Hall upstairs, they are recorded. Mayapur TV, they record it. I remember even the lectures I gave there, they're still there. So, if we have to act, we have to think globally, but we have to act locally. We can't have the same timetable with someone who is living in Australia. We can't have the same timetable with someone who is in Vrindavan. Because as we are discussing now, perhaps they are sleeping. Then we could say, well, the time of Vrindavan is this time, and Krishna appeared there, so we have to follow that schedule. No, it's not like that. So the point is, we have to think globally, but we should act locally. We should act based on what's obtainable within our environment. In fact, Prabhupada, when he came to America, he also followed that principle. He came to America and he met all these hippies and bombs and derelicts and all these people. He himself was chanting 64 rounds in Gaudiya Math. So at some point in time, the devotees came to him, they were asking, how many rounds should this? So he said 64 rounds. He said, they told him that's not possible. He said 32. They said still it's not possible. So then he brought it down to rock bottom, 16. He said, that's final. But because he's an acharya, he could do that and still carry the people along, take them back to God. He could say, well, in India, I'm from Gaudiya Math. If you don't chant 64 hours, to hell with you. So remember, there are some devotees in America here who are agitating that, all his con devotees should chant 64 rounds. Which is a good propaganda. I remember one of them says that Lord Chaitanya also said there's a chant 64 rounds. But then they undermine the principle of the acharya. Now how many saints came from India, from Gaudiya Math, to spread Lord Chaitanya's mission all over the world? It's only Prabhupada. How many people came to America to change derelicts, hippies, to sadhus, to goswamis? He's only Prabhupada. Even some of his godbrothers tried to come to preach to the world. They never succeeded. One of them went to England. He never succeeded. He never made any serious impact. He went back to India. So sometimes we are prone to undermine people. And it's also based on envy. So even here is a Prabhupada disciple who is making propaganda what Prabhupada did not really establish. And himself, he went to take shelter of Narayan Maharaj. He started finding fault with Narayan Maharaj, and then he left him. And he make. So, the point I'm trying to make is that we should think globally, but we should act locally. Otherwise, our daily schedule will be interrupted. I tell you, if we sleep on time, and even I just read some things from some scientific researches on the bodily functions, that from between the hours of 9, from the hours of 9 or 10, the body is actually being detoxicated. The immune system
is, you know, removing all these toxics within the body from 9 o'clock, from 9 p.m. And therefore, advocates of, you know, of Oriental medicine, they are saying that that's the best time to go to bed so that the body will have optimum, you know, workings. And so sometimes we didn't know about all of these details at the beginning, but, you know, like when we are living in a temple, when we're brahmacharis, I mean, just everybody is forced to go to rest at 9 o'clock. Nobody gives any medical reason. But now all of the medical reasons are also coming out. Okay? So, basically, everything that has been said down by our acharyas, our predecessors, they are very much scientifically oriented. And if we